Well,
yeah.
Whenever you're ready, Bart. Whenever you're ready.
How come this thing's not on?
Because we're doing the audit presentation first.
Oh,
so I've got it hooked up there.
Perfect.
That's fine.
No worries.
Okay.
Recording in progress.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday, October 24th, 2023 City Council meeting. And as always, we start with the Pledge of Allegiance. And I saw this great idea last Tuesday, so Mark Foster can lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very nicely done, Mark. Thank you. Now we will have the ever-important roll call by the clerk.
Koch?
Here.
Transier?
Here.
Plocher?
Here.
Soling?
Here.
Funkhauser?
Here.
Merrick?
Here.
Terulis?
Here.
Cornelius?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Ethan, welcome to you as well. Okay. Next, I have no amendments to the agenda. We do have a presentation to Mark Foster. So Mark here is retiring. When's your last day today?
Friday.
Oh, Friday. Okay. That's pretty dang close. This is the last real important meeting, though.
It is.
It better be. So we have for Mark a nice certificate of recognition, and you get a choice. You get a choice, a Hawaiian shirt or a Halloween shirt. So I'm stepping around that side.
So I don't just do this for every person who goes that way, but Mark is retiring, and he's had a long, distinguished career, because you are a leatherneck, right?
I am.
Yes. So, the mayor and city council of the United City of York will present this certificate to Mark Foster. What's your middle initial?
C.
Mark C. Foster, in honor of his retirement from Shaw Local News Network. Mark Foster studied journalism, English, and political science at Western Illinois University in Macomb, Illinois. It says you graduated in 2018, is that right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. He began writing newspaper stories at the age of 19, just a few years ago. For many years, Mark worked for Chronicle Newspapers, which later was purchased by Shaw Media. He also worked as a freelance writer for the Daily Herald.
Where'd you get all this stuff?
I'm government. I'm government. I have my way. Mark joined the Record Newspapers and KendallCountyNow.com, two of Shaw Local News Network publications, in January 2022, coming up on 3 years, where he covered the Yorkville City Council meetings, the Yorkville School District, and the Kendall County Board. Mark has won. Is that a better shot there? Mark has won awards from the Illinois Press Association Best of the Press contest, including first place. Have you really? That's awesome.
Yeah, I did.
Good for you. Was it on the city?
On the county.
Okay, that's good enough. It's Kendall County. Articles written. We thank Mark for dedication to local news journalism and your book committee. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Much.
And
Mayor.
Did you pick out a shirt?
I love it.
They run a little small. I don't know if you want that or if you want something bigger.
Well, this would be great for me to scare all the trick or treaters in Batavia with the Yorkville on here.
Ethan, you want to cover that?
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Do a photo here. You want this or not?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's it.
Here, you should be holding that, not me. Here, I'll hold your shirt for you.
Thank you.
There you go. Look at that. Oh, let me hide the size. So let's see if the size is bad.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been my pleasure to work here in Yorkville. It's a great community, and I've enjoyed working with all of you and with the staff and the police department. Everybody's been great, and you really made me feel welcome when I came here, and we've had a great community, and I'll watch you from afar, watch you continue to grow.
You will not. Once you're done, you'll be like, I'm sick of this.
Thank you very much. This is great.
Okay, now to presentation number two. We have the audit report. And who's going to start here? Rob, Jen?
Jen will start.
Jen is with the audit firm. And fortunately, you didn't have to drive 2 hours or so.
No, very often.
She lives close by. I won't say where, but she lives very close by. So welcome. Now, I think you're going to just do like a high overview, not of the numbers, but just the rules.
Yeah, really talk through kind of the audit documents.
The documents.
Highlights there, and then Rob will go in more detail.
Our numbers guru over here.
Yeah.
And what was it? 12 years in a row, Rob? How many years in a row?
Up in the camper award?
Yeah.
12.
12 years in a row.
Awesome.
That's awesome. So for that, Rob, you want a Halloween shirt? We can get you one.
Appreciate it. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
Hey, that's an extra. So, good evening. As Mayor said, I'm Jen Martinson with Lauterbach & Haven, here to present the audit results for the fiscal year ended April 30th, 2023. I do want to start by thanking Rob and the rest of the finance team for all of your hard work during the audit process. For us, it's really a six-month process of when we have our first planning meeting to our internal control walkthroughs, fieldwork testing, drafting the financials, and then, of course, presenting in front of council this evening. But really, the efforts of Rob and the team are year-round in making a successful audit, so we really appreciate that. Thank you. So an audit is required by state statute to be completed by an independent auditor. And really, there's two goals for the audit. So the first is to review that internal control environment, and then second would be to provide an opinion on the financial statements presented this evening. We have done that. We have issued an unmodified opinion, which is a clean audit opinion. That is the highest opinion that we can issue, and it really just means that the financial statements are materially correct. So probably one of the most important pieces of information this evening, we have a clean audit opinion. I know it's a rather large document, so my goal really is to highlight some key areas for council to spend their time in. So there's three sections. That first section is your introductory section, which will have the transmittal letter on page 3. And that's really an introduction to the city as a whole. So a lot of information there written in management's words. Again, just a nice non-financial introduction to the city. And then also, as Mayor mentioned, the certificate of achievement on page 9. So I hear it's the 12th year. It's a very prestigious award. It's the certificate of achievement for excellence in financial reporting. Speaks very highly to the effort that goes into preparing the financial statements. So that was awarded to the city again for fiscal year 2022, and we do anticipate the city will receive it for fiscal year 2023 when these financials are submitted. So congratulations. The next section is your financial section, and in this section on page 15 is where you'll find management's discussion and analysis for the MD&A. This is probably the most important part of this audit report here in helping you really digest the information. So it's over 200 pages, but this section alone is 13 pages and really is the executive summary to the audit report. So it's going to touch on key highlights for the year, changes from last year to this year. So really, if you just read that section there, you'll have a full understanding of all of the financial information. And then finally, I wanted to highlight the statistical section towards the back there on page 172. So this section has a wealth of information really for the city. So 10 years of trend information on a variety of topics, fund balances, property taxes, major revenues, expenditures. So really cool to see 10 years of trend information all in one place for the city. Finally, we did have a smaller document that we labeled management letter. And this really is just our chance to have any communication to council that we think is important. So you'll see here the majority of what is included in that smaller document is really related to upcoming governmental accounting standards board statements, or GASB, that we're required to implement over the next few years. So we'll work really closely with Rob to see if any of those have an impact on the city's financial statements, make sure those are implemented as required. And then also for prior recommendations, we had GASB 87 related to leases, so you'll see some additional information there in the audit report this year, as well as some information on updates for deficit fund balance. As I mentioned, we do review the internal control environment, and I would be required to communicate this evening if we had any difficulties during the audit, disagreements with management, and I'm happy to report that we did not. So, clean audit opinion, huge thanks to staff for all of their efforts. And I know Rob has a lot more information for you, so.
Any questions for Ms. Jen before Rob speaks? Probably off the hook.
Awesome. Well, I'll stick around.
Yeah, listen, after this is over, if you want to bolt, you're more than welcome to.
Okay. Thank you.
But remember, we have some fine restaurants in Yorkville you can spend some money at.
What about a holiday shirt?
Oh, wow. We could probably arrange for that. Since we did get a clean report.
We did.
All right. Good evening. This is an audit overview of fiscal year ended April 30th, 2023. As was mentioned previously, we did receive the 12th time in a row a certificate of achievement for excellence in financial reporting. We will be submitting the fiscal year 2023 audited financials to see if we can make a 13th in a row. So, here we go. So, we're going to do a little trip down yesteryear, looking at general fund and fund balance history, starting all the way back in fiscal year 2006. At that time, you can see fund balance was almost at $6 million, kind of bolstered at the time by bond proceeds.
Where'd those extra shirts go?
In-town road program at the time.
Here.
Those proceeds were spent down in fiscal year 7, fiscal year 8. There was some room for bad debt in 08 and 09, and there was some developer activities that were occurring at the time. That was written off at the end of fiscal year 10, and general fund fund balance was actually negative by $500,000. Rebounded a little bit. That was about cut in half fiscal year 2011, before going back into the black in FY 2012, and then pretty significantly increasing almost up to $4 million in fiscal year 13, which was the first year that the nominal sales tax was implemented. And from there, other besides a little blip in FY 14, which went down a little bit that year, we were closing out our municipal building and rec center funds. But since then, the general fund has increased pretty precipitously as its fund balance goes. Most recently, fiscal year 2022, we had $10.62 million. This year, we had a surplus of $369,000, which brought fund balance up just shy of the general fund of $11 million at $10.996 million. If you look on the bottom of the chart, it shows you fund balance percentage. Is it 46%? That does include expenditures and transfers out. If you get rid of the transfers out, actually that number was up to 68%, which is about 8 months worth of fund balance. The white bars from about fiscal year 12 onward are the negative balances of DIF fund. Currently that's about $2.7 million combined, although it is of note that the downtown TIF does actually have a positive fund balance, downtown TIF 2, of about $88,000. So when you look at the TIFs and just doing expenditures, again, excluding interfund transfers, is about 50% fund balance, including the negative balances of the TIF. So here you have the surplus deficit amount for the general fund. Same story here. Went way up in 06, building because of bond proceeds, declined in 7 and 8, spending down those bond proceeds, building roads. Had the Great Recession hit, had some bad debt, and we slowly grow the general fund back up to where it is today. As I mentioned previously, in FY14, closing out the old municipal building, rec center funds, but ever since then, we've had some pretty, decent surpluses, particularly in fiscal year 21 and 22, with the way our revenue enhancements coming out of COVID, they're north of $1 million. And in the most recent fiscal year ended 2023, we had a surplus of $369,000. So looking at revenue performance of the major revenue line items within the general fund, pretty much every major revenue stream exceeded budgetary amounts. We've had some really unprecedented sales tax numbers over the last several years. Fiscal year 21, we saw sales and non-home rural sales increased by 12 and 13% respectively. And FY 22, it went really, really unprecedented with a 24% growth in sales tax year over year and 28%. A non-home rural tax sales growth year over year. Now this year, a little bit of a return to normalcy, at least from a historical standpoint, but sales tax did continue to go up by 4% for the fiscal year 2023. And non-home rural sales tax actually went up 8% in the current fiscal year. And since 2020, our sales tax is actually up 43%. Another major revenue stream that's been particularly robust over the last several years is income tax. Now we actually saw a 32% growth in that in FY21, 29% growth in that last year, and then 6% growth this year. And again, since fiscal year 2020, income tax has actually increased by 79%. So hopefully that trend continues. Utility tax continues to increase as we have more and more new housing starts. Building permits, actually 736,000 is what was recognized in the general fund, just to cover the costs of the building department, but actually we had over $1 million in overall building permits, with the remainder, the 276, some of that thousand being transferred to citywide capital to fund future road projects. Our video game tax continues to increase due to its popularity and the prevalence of gaming stations in town. And even excise, the old telecom tax, actually did better than anticipated. That revenue has been sharply declining in recent years just because landlines are going away as more and more people use cell phones. And investment earnings, what a difference a year makes. Last year, we did 13,000 citywide, and that was because investment yields were so low, getting 1, 2, maybe 5 basis points at best. This year, it's a little bit more, probably on the higher end of what's considered normal, 3, 4, 5%. The general fund yielded almost $208,000 in investment earnings. The citywide, we actually did $560,000. So that's a major improvement from the year prior. Looking on the other side of the ledger, all the functional departments within the general fund, as well as Parks and Rec, Library, and Sewer and Water, did come in under budget. The lone exception being streets and sanitation. Now, just to clarify, streets did come in under budget. It was about $27,000 under budget. That was the sanitation portion, which is where we pay our garbage fees, primarily to Root. So we were over by about $30,000, but it had no real impact on the bottom line because those overages and costs were offset by garbage surcharge revenues on the revenue side of the general fund, so it pretty much netted itself away.
Rob, is that driven by new residents?
It is, yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So here we have a snapshot of the overall general fund performance for fiscal year 2023. Again, revenues exceeded budget and bonds by almost $2.2 million. Again, that has to do with the prevalence of just strong tax receipts. We also did receive our second allotment, or second tranche, I guess the feds call it, of ARPA money, so that's $1.4 million. Expenditures were about $450,000 under what was budgeted, so that's very good. And then net transfers actually exceeded budgeted amounts by $2.1 million. What we did there will be kind of shown in the fiscal year 24 budget document is taking a large portion of the general fund surplus, transferring over citywide capital in order to mitigate future roadway projects. I know we have quite a few planned with the subdivision paving coming up here in fiscal year 25 and beyond, so we're trying to mitigate the need for debt service by transferring as much as we can from the general fund into citywide capital. So had that transfer not occurred, the general fund probably would have a surplus north of $5 million. And again, we finished the year at $369,000 surplus, which is over $500,000 better than we initially anticipated when we did the budget. Other items of note, there's fund balance, categories, and the amounts. They're identified in the notes starting on page 76. And then we have our pension and OPEB. OPEB is the other post-employment benefits. We have an OPEB because by state statute, we're required to have retirees on our health insurance plan. Should they want to be on our health insurance plan, they do pay the full premium, but we still have an OPEB liability because of that. And that begins on page 81. So just briefly looking at the two primary, or I guess the only two pension funds here at the city, I will start with Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, which all full-time employees who are non-sworn, meaning they're not police, are part of this pension fund. Not the best year for IMRF. They historically do very well. This year was a tough year. The equity markets actually had a return of about negative 13%. It was 12.9, and that's reflected in these numbers here. As you can see, our pension liability increased by $1.4 million. The city's net pension position, rather, at IMRF decreased by about 1.9. And you can see the percent funded dropped from 111. We're actually more than funded last year to about 92%. Although those 2 years where they had really good returns was in 2020 and 2021, and we're still reaping the benefits from that in our employer rate. I'll just give you a little brief history there. Our employer rate was at 11% in 2021. It went down to 8.9% in 2022. Currently it's at 6.56%. And then for 2024, it's actually estimated to increase even further, 5.9%. So every 1% reduction saves the city about $50,000. So hopefully that's a trend that will continue. Looking at the other pension fund for our sworn police officers, police pension fund, total pension liability increased by about $800,000, but the net position of the fund also increased by about $500,000. You can see to the right there, percent funded is still a little bit higher than last year, about 30 basis points, so we're right at 54%. This is the first year that the consolidated pension fund for the police, for the downstate police and fire, which pretty much means every pension fund but Chicago, we consolidated all the funds into one mega fund called IPOPIF, which stands for the Illinois Police Officers Pension Investment Fund. So the hope behind that is they can start generating returns similar to that of IMRF, which is north typically of 7% every year. So hopefully that will come to fruition, and we'll start to see that percent funded number get higher and higher each fiscal year. Other items of note, we have some long-term debt summaries starting on page 67. If you want to look at specific debt service schedules for particular bond issues, that starts on page 157. And then we have our various developer commitment narratives starting on page 78. Moving to the statistical section, that starts on page 170. Just gives you some nice historical trends regarding city finances, revenue, debt capacity, demographic and economic info, and then just various operating indicators throughout the city. Of note, starting on paper page 202, rather, you can see our employee counts. We're at 93 full-time employees at the end of fiscal year 2023, which kind of puts us almost in line with where we were in 2007. And we're still actually four short of the all-time high of 97 full-time employees at the end of fiscal year 2008. Starting on page 204, you can see some miscellaneous service data provided by various departments, traffic permits issued, streets resurfaced, inventory of streets, water, sewer, storm, et cetera, as well as new housing starts per year. So moving on from the audited financials to that slimmer document called the management letter. We did have a couple of comments. Funds with deficit equity, this is repeated from the prior year, just reminding us that the countryside and the downtown TIFs still have negative fund balances north of $2 million. Hopefully over time these TIF districts develop and we'll be able to turn that position right side up. Although, as I noted previously, the downtown TIF 2 did finish the fiscal year with a positive fund balance of about $88,000. And then, as Jen mentioned previously, we did implement GASB Statement Number 87, County for Leases, so that is done and completed. As we move forward into next fiscal year, GASB is going to keep me and staff and the auditors busy with two new GASB pronouncements. GASB 94 has to do with private-public and public-public partnerships and payment arrangements therein, and GASB 96, which has to do with subscription-based IT arrangements. Then we even have a new GASB in the subsequent fiscal year 2025, which is what we're preparing for now. What we will be preparing for as we get deeper into the budget season, that'll be GASB 100, having to do with accounting changes and corrections. So looking forward, as we move through the current fiscal year and head into fiscal year 2025, we have a tax levy discussion coming up. We've already started that process. Last meeting, the tax levy estimate was approved. The public hearing scheduled for November the 14th, and there'll be discussion and potential vote either on the 20th of November or December 12th. Well, we have the budget rollout as well. We actually just finished meeting with the budget departments last week, so that has started. We'll continue with that process, the planning process, through January of this upcoming year. Finalize the budget in February, like we present to council in February as well. Have a public hearing in March, and then we'll have the last meeting in March and the two meetings in April to discuss and vote in a new budget. So that wraps up the presentations. Any questions we have here?
Questions for Rob? Rob, thank you very much. Anyone? Thank you, Rob. Thank you. Nice tie, by the way.
Thank you.
Excellent. We have no public hearings. Do we have any citizen comments on items on the agenda? No. We have a consent agenda consisting of minutes from September 26th and October 10th City Council meetings, bill payments totaling $1,811,220.73, PW 2023-81, North Central Take Rehab, change order number 2, and authorize the mayor to execute. And real quickly, what is that change order number 2, Eric, Brad?
It's for some work that's past due work for one of the cellular carriers on the tower.
Okay.
It extends the completion date.
Okay. Thank you. We have treasurer's report for September of 23, annual treasurer's reports. That's it for consent agenda. Is there a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
Second.
Coke and was it Cornelius?
Plocher.
Plocher. Came down that way. Okay. Do a roll call, please.
Coke?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Terulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Yes.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Cornelius?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you all very much. Next, we have, the mayor's report. Still me. We have number 2023-60, the Microsoft Office 365 license renewal. This is for, 3 years? Approximately, $25,000 per year. I'm looking for a motion and a second to approve.
Second.
I believe I heard Tarula second. And first, was that Solon?
That was exciting.
Okay, questions, comments? Roll call, please.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Terulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Cornelius?
Aye.
Coke?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Cruising along. Well, we have Public Works Committee report.
Okay. Motion to approve the 2024 Road to Better Roads Program Professional Services Agreement, Design Engineering, and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Merrick. And this is approximately $85,000 for the engineering, and right now we're proposing about a $1.5 million improvement plan for next year. Is that correct? And as we get further into the budget process, as we did the previous couple of years, in this current year's budget, as we see how that's coming together, we may recommend additional dollars, but we don't have that yet today. Questions or comments? Roll call, please.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Terulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Cornelius?
Aye.
Coke?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Anything else under Public Works? No? Sounds good. Economic Development, anything?
No report.
I will add one thing. Actually, Bart made me aware of this. Bright Farms is looking to start their hiring process in January, I believe, correct? And what are they looking for? Is it maybe you have a little more details on it?
75 hourly positions of varying skill sets and pay, and 15 to 20 managerial salary positions they're going to be looking to hire. So they're going to get the message out at some point in the future. They want to do a job fair, hire local people, etc. So that's exciting.
It's exciting. It's like 90 to 100 jobs. So. Public Safety Committee reports?
No report.
Admin committee report. It looks like we have something very exciting here.
It is. It's a long one. ADM 2024-44, city liability insurance and workers' compensation insurance renewal. A motion to proceed with option 2 and authorize entering into a one-year insurance agreement with Natural Union of Pittsburgh, VAAIG, Glatfelters for property casualty insurance in the amount not to exceed $182,704. Authorized entering into a one-year insurance agreement with the Illinois Public Risk Fund for workers' compensation insurance in an amount not to exceed $199,099 to authorize entering into a one-year agreement with Alliance Metro Insurance Services for corporate services in an amount not to exceed $20,000 and to authorize entering into a one-year insurance agreement with Hiscox Insurance Company for cyber insurance in an amount not to exceed $16,667, which was the reason for offer number two.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Soling, and that was approximately, what, a 6.4% increase?
Yes.
But we had, what, 8% budget, Rob?
10%.
Oh, 10%. Well, that's even better. And help me remember, is this fiscal year or is this calendar year?
It's calendar year.
It is, so it'll be January 1?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Other questions, comments? Roll call, please.
Terulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Yes.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Cornelius?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yeah.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Anything else from admin? Oh, sorry. Thank you. Anything else from admin?
I said enough. No further.
Okay. Park board?
Just two items, Mr. Mayor. If anyone's still interested in sponsoring the flag for the city's Legion Veterans Day Flags of Valor, flags are going up Friday. So if anyone's interested, we're still taking anyone who'd like to sponsor a flag for a veteran, as well as just a reminder, next Tuesday, October 1st is Halloween, and the city's trick or treating hours are from 4 to 7 p.m.
Very nice. And I've seen the forecast, going to cool down, but doesn't look like rain. So it'll be a good day. Any questions, comments for Tim? Tim, the soccer fields are always looking nice. I hear comments from the coaches all the time. It is good to hear. Although I had one of the coaches hunt me down the other day. He was upset about something. Chased me down. We got to resolve. Planning and Zoning Commission. Well, that's back to me again. We have PZC 2023-08 and EDC 2023-35, an ordinance approving a special use for a gasoline service station with an accessory convenience store at 107 East Stagecoach Trail for Quick Trip Corporation, and that's at the northeast, right northeast corner, 47 and 71. Looking for a motion, second, and then I'll have Christy explain what's going on here.
So moved.
Second.
Coke, and who was it? Transier? Okay. Christy, take it away, please.
Okay. This is a site that we saw a couple of years ago that was approved for a gas station. It was a Graham station. The new contract purchaser, Quick Trip, is here. They are also proposing to do a gas station with an accessory convenience store. They are not asking for any variances. Just a special use authorization is required by ordinance. The property consists of two parcels on about 5.5 acres. They are proposing to build a 5,300 square foot convenience store, and the adjacent parcel that is about an acre or so is currently undeveloped, possibly future development for a car wash facility. And then what's unique about this site, they are doing underground detention beneath the parking area. Petitioner Adam Burkus is here. If you have any questions for a Quick Trip or about their business operation.
So, just a question or two that I have. So this, if it is approved, would wipe out the other?
Correct, the other special use.
Okay. And there are no variances you're not looking for? No sign variances?
No sign.
Do you hear that, Mr. Funkhauser?
No, I noticed that.
Okay, just want to point it out. Questions, comments from the council? Roll call, please.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Cornelius?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Terulis?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Thanks for picking out that tough conversation. Next, we have PZC 2312 and EDC 2343, an ordinance approving a final plat of subdivision for Kendall Marketplace Lots 4 and 5. And this is on the Route 34 side. It's taking two lots and combining them into one lot. Is that correct, Christy?
Creating three new lots.
Three new lots. Oh, two to three, not two to one. Oh, God, I wrote my notes down wrong. Good thing she's doing this, not me. Anything else we need to know, Christy? How about the size of these lots, roughly?
They're an acre apiece. It's a 3-acre set. So it was originally planned for two lots and a half of three.
Perfect. Questions or comments? Roll call, please.
Motion.
Oh, Jesus, sorry. Can I get a motion in a second? I was looking.
Second.
Tarullo, fun conversation. I was looking at my notes too. I didn't write it down. I was just getting ready to cheat off you there. Okay, now, please.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Aye.
Cornelius.
Aye.
Koch.
Aye.
Plocher.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Tarullis.
Aye.
Trazier.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Next, we have PZC 2316, EDC 2345, Kendall County Petition 2330, 1.5 mile review, 6145 Whitetail Ridge Drive. Christy, anything we need to know about this?
Similar to the one we did a couple of months ago. It's a, just a consolidation of two lots so that they can aggregate an existing utility to build one home across the two lots.
And it's not going to be in our town at any point, correct. So just as a formality. I do need a motion and a second for this, apparently.
So moved.
Second. Koch, Soling, questions, comments? Roll call, please.
Merrick.
Aye.
Cornelius.
Aye.
Koch.
Aye.
Plocher.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Tarullis.
Aye.
Trazier.
Yes.
Soling.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you all. Okay. City Council report. City Clerk report.
No report.
Community and liaison reports. Anyone at either end?
Oh,
yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, no. I got two, both for the Yorkville Educational Foundation. One is we are hosting a trivia night from 7 to 10 p.m. on November 2nd at Rosati's. That is not only a trivia night, but it is a recruiting event. If anybody wants more information or is interested in joining YEF, either as a sponsoring partner or as a board member, that's your opportunity. In addition, on 12-2-2023, we have Brewing for a Brighter Future, which is a return to Flight Bottle Shop for a tapping event. A new whistle will be our sponsoring partner for the breweries as well. And that should be from 1 to 5. That's Saturday.
And I might be there assisting, so I encourage you all to come. It'll be a fun time. Any other community or liaison reports? Nope. Okay. Staff report?
No reports.
Mayor's report. Back to me again. Boy, oh boy. Matt, thanks for giving me a break in there.
You're welcome.
Okay. Oh, this will be fun, though. I get to turn this over to Christy. We're back to the UDO, Unified, for all those who are attending, haven't been here before, Unified Development Ordinance, zoning document we're looking at and discussing. Very comprehensive. It's been going on for several years. And Christy, you're going to give us some high-level items that were undecided that we need to make decisions on, whether it's tonight or in the next month or so or 5 years, whatever. But Christy, take it away again.
Sure. So the UDO is reviewed by an advisory committee as well as the Planning and Zoning Commission. Each body recommended various changes to the document. They're summarized in the memo provided. I'll go through each of the seven recommendations. And these recommendations have not been included in a document that is before you today. So staff is just seeking some discussion and consensus on direction for us to revise the document to bring before you at a later date. So the first recommendation was for chapter 2. So your choices in that chapter dealt with the naming of different districts. And the use of the term family unit or the use of the term dwelling unit. I don't know if you want to discuss as we go along or just have you do a summary of all the items.
Why don't you do a quick summary first?
Sure. The second recommendation was to chapter 4, which are the use standards specifically for accessory dwelling units. The recommendations were either to allow accessory dwelling units as outright permitted within all residential zoning districts or attach accessory dwelling units be permitted and then detached are a special use. The third recommendation was to chapter 5, development standards and related to parking. The recommendation was either a minimum off-street parking requirement of one space per dwelling unit versus a minimum off-street parking requirement of two spaces per dwelling unit.
Sorry, wait.
Yeah. Okay. The fourth
I didn't
recommendation,
sorry.
The fourth
six signs at the yard signs. Either regulate yard signs in regards to size, location, or number, or not to regulate yard signs at all. The fifth recommendation had to do with Chapter 7 subdivision standards. There's a connectivity index calculation in there, either to keep it or remove it. And six was Chapter 7 subdivision standards. There's a cluster development recommendation in there. Should we allow cluster development to be permitted as permitted, permitted as planned unit developments, or allow them to be outright permitted developments? That's it. Chapter 3, there was discussion, I'll just highlight that, about district standards with density, reducing the minimum requirements for R1 and R2, and staff that specific direction from City Council at the August 8th meeting. So that's reflected in a attached version of the draft UDO. It's not an increase in density, nor is there a creation of a new district. And that is the summary.
Thank you. Questions or comments? Well, let's start with the first one. We'll knock a couple of these out today if we can. If we can't, that's fine. We're going to 8:15. After that, you're probably going to be sick of this for the night, and then we'll come back to another time. Okay, definitions. So we have the use of the term family unit or use of the term dwelling unit. What say you, anyone? Anyone? I see a hand. Whose hand is that, Mr. Plocher?
I vote family.
Family?
Sure. So my position as well is
family.
It is family.
Anyone else?
Is that what is presently listed as?
Yes.
Ken's good with that. Anyone else?
Not family. Has anybody complained about the use of family?
So there's not a complaint about the use of family. It just requires a definition for family.
They broke the note.
Anyone else?
I'd also like to keep it a family unit.
Anyone else?
It was my recommendation for the advisory committee to have family, so.
Okay, well, I have six. I either missed two of you or two of you voiced a concern one way or the other, but I think we're going to leave it as family. Unless anyone's
trying to say there were some nodding heads.
Oh, I didn't mean any hairs.
Yeah, well, okay. Bart's hair got in the way.
No strenuous objections. Okay. That was from A Few Good Men, if anyone remembers that movie. I strenuously object. Tom Cruise wasn't happy with Demi Moore after that, or Demi, or however she says her name. But again, that's from 30 years ago. Okay. Next. Use standards. ADUs. All accessory dwelling units. Now, I will say, before we get into this one, we can have variations of these, which I might be in favor of. But anyway, right now, all accessory dwelling units are permitted within relevant zoning districts, or attached accessory dwelling units are permitted, and detached ADUs are special use within relevant zoning districts. Any thoughts? Do we have any questions? I guess ADUs is a newer concept, so I guess it's maybe not as easy to understand as family versus dwelling. Any questions, comments? Mr. Cope?
Christy, can you give me an example of each one, just simple, and then if I understand?
Sure. So there, thank you. ADUs are accessory dwelling units. There's an attached dwelling unit where you would have like a basement apartment style or an attic apartment. Or you can have an addition that's built on. And the difference between it just being a regular addition versus an ADU, that has its own separate exit and entrance. The exit and entrance would have to be in the rear, so you wouldn't be able to see it from the street, and it would kind of blend in with the home environment. But they would have their own living quarters, bathroom, kitchen, everything. The detached is a separate building on the lot. It has to be in the rear yard. It can't have a separate driveway to it, and can't be indistinguishable from the main house and materials. So it would have to be complementary and consistent with materials. And the maximum size is about 900 square feet.
So do we have any examples of the detached town?
There might be some non-conforming
ones. There are a few. Some we don't have records of them, though.
People have living quarters in their backyard, is what you're telling me, right?
Yes, they would have pre-existed either our zoning code or our relevant zoning code.
There's one right on Sonoma Street, right by the right by Parkview, where they have a garage, and above the garage, they built a apartment structure above the garage.
But that's attached. She's not talking about detached.
That would be detached. It's a detached garage with a unit above.
It's a separate garage.
Oh, and they're in the garage. Okay. So then the in-law suite, if you had one of those in your house, that would be the attached version, right?
If it had its own separate kitchen and bathroom, yes, that would be considered attached.
And entrance.
And entrance, correct.
And entrance, correct. So you can have two kitchens in your house. You have one entrance.
What if they shared a garage and the entrance were in the garage?
If it's a separate entrance, I would think it would be...
I'm sorry, what was the
If there were two doors in a garage,
yeah,
one garage,
the garage,
it would be an attached ADU.
Correct, it would be an attached.
No, I'm
just So one drive, right?
Correct. They would not have a separate drive.
What about mailboxes, right?
Would not have a separate mailbox.
So they'd share a mailbox.
They would share the mailbox. They would not have a separate meter for utilities, so water would all
So it'd be 100 Jones Avenue A and 100 Jones Avenue B or something like that.
Or is it
100 Jones Avenue.
Right, 100 Jones Avenue with a different name on the mailbox.
Okay. Now, one thing I brought up that I had a concern about is if this gets approved, pretty much any single family property in town can now become essentially a duplex property. Is that? I mean, you're allowing two people. Doesn't mean they're equal size, but you're pretty much allowing any property to become a duplex property.
Well, duplex, they would have their own driveway. They would have their own separate insurance on the
okay.
front.
Okay.
They could have they would have separate utility hookups, separate. And addresses, this would all have one address, one drive. One
two homes, but not quite the same. Okay.
Two living units.
Yeah. And then the other thing, and I think you addressed this for me, one other concern I had is what would stop somebody from buying a whole block of homes and then just start dividing and putting two places residence on every lot in the whole subdivision?
Nothing.
Wasn't there an owner-occupied requirement, though?
No, you can add one.
We can add one. There's not one.
Correct.
Okay. Because that, honestly, the concern I have, I don't know if anyone saw that, but you know what? Somebody could say, I'm going to buy every house in this subdivision. And now, there might be HOAs that supersede the city rules, but there's a lot of areas that don't have HOAs. Now we have two units in every home in the street.
Yeah, owner-occupied section is required in the commercial.
Correct. For the commercial, yes.
So you have to own a house in order to have a separate business structure on site that would be allowed.
And that's a special use.
So you couldn't create a business shed and then rent it out to somebody else. It would have to be yours.
Correct.
Questions, comments?
So as we discussed this one, going through committees and everything, the UDO committee recommended this to be outright permitted. And the Plan Commission recommended it to be attached being outright permitted, but then the detached would be a special use. Now, a big part of the UDO is to reduce the amount of special uses we have, try to incorporate standards that are in here so we're mitigating that. If the concerns are, you know, how much it's going to be utilized, the addition of the requirement of owner-occupied does help with that, you know, so that you don't have, as you said, somebody buying a whole block and converting them to primary residence with a 900 square foot, you know, accessory structure.
Or just rent the basement out, put a door and entrance in there, and boom, now you got.
Well, you have to provide the kitchen. It's the multiple steps.
I have a kitchen, just for
right,
example.
So
I have a kitchen, a bath. I have everything in my basement other than an entrance. I can provide a separate entrance for whatever, 30, 40 grand, and now I have, you know.
Exactly.
There's a lot of places you can do that in town.
Oh, no doubt about it. So it's a matter of people have to do that. Do we have verification of how it would be put through? If it's just outright permitted, is there any staff involvement for?
Only a building permit.
Building permit.
Okay.
So I still stand by the, you know, either outright permitted or we just take it as the, you know, attached being permitted and detached just requires special use. And the two that are in there.
Questions, comments?
I want to see them both still special use.
I'm sorry?
Both of them still should be special use.
I agree
with that, actually. Yeah.
So allow them, but be special use, is that what I'm hearing? So, just throwing it out there one more time. Special use, but somebody could come forward, 5 homes in a row, special use for all of them, and now you get 5 units that just become 10 units?
But we have to approve it, correct?
Yeah, we have to approve that, though, yeah.
Okay, how are you going to differentiate between the person at 100 Jones Street and 102 Jones Street? Because the one house has black shutters and everyone has green shutters? I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just, these are things that think of now because these can get out of hand real quickly. And I'm not opposed necessarily to the concept, but this one I'm struggling with because I can see some real need for this. I can see where it could be very useful, practical, but I also can see where it can be a slippery slope real quickly, too.
I mean, we've only got a couple of these throughout the city that are the ones that just people have done. It doesn't seem to be a prevalent issue. We're just trying to formalize it a little bit, I think.
Yeah, and that's fair, but is it not being done because most people don't know it's allowed or know it's not allowed and say, I'm not touching it? You know, no different than Chris, when you're back to something else we, you know, disagree on, the higher density. People don't ask for the higher density because they know it's a taller threshold or higher threshold to get that approved, a higher standard. But if that higher density were to be approved, Katie barred the door, whatever the heck they say, you know, you're going to have people running, let's go with the higher density. And that's my concern here is we do this and in the next 2 years we have 50 of these or 100 of these, 200 of these. I don't know that answer, but these are things I think of. I don't stay up at night, don't worry about that. I do think of that. And well, we can come back to some of that, but these are things I want to talk about.
Well, I think if you're going to outright permit them, like the committee recommended, I think the addition of owner-occupied would probably make more sense. And if we're not going to include the owner-occupied, if you're going to not outright permit them, then I think doing attached being outright permitted and detached special uses would make the most sense. But to prohibit them as they are now, right? They're strictly prohibited.
Prohibited now.
I think that needs to change. I think we should have these available to the people who would be able to make use of them.
So, Dan, you're kind of saying follow the Plan Commission recommendation?
Yes.
The owner-occupied added to it?
Well, I think owner-occupied would alleviate a lot of the concerns about someone coming in and buying a block of houses and putting additional residential units in there. So if you're going to do this, you have to live in the house. And I think the purpose of it is to, your kid finishes college and needs some place to go, and he doesn't want to have his own room upstairs next to his 13-year-old sister, so you can make a room in the basement for him. Or for...
with a separate entrance.
Right. Or for a parent, you know, who's going to move back in with their kids because they can't maintain the house on their own. So that's what I think we're trying to do.
Let me ask this question, Christy. If I have a house, and I've seen a house this way, and I want to have an entrance from the outside of a house to the basement, we don't prohibit that, do we?
No.
Okay, so we could do that now. Somebody could have their parent live with them now.
Right, but that the way it is now, the parent would have to, like, if they wanted to have their own cooking space, they couldn't do it.
No, that's not true. I like I said, I have a basement. I have a full basement with a kitchen, a bath, a living room. I use it as office, but a bedroom. If I put an entrance, this could serve that purpose for somebody.
So there's a little nuance to that. We've had complaints about homes being divided into two different living units, and there's nothing on the face of it that shows that it is two different living units, but if you enter the unit, there's an upstairs door and a downstairs door. That's kind of skirting what the purpose of the single family residential district is. So my question, if it's owner-occupied, Are you saying that the owner has to be related to the person that is utilizing it, or that the owner has to live in the primary home on the lot, and then they can rent out or lease out or allow someone to live on the accessory structure, whoever they want?
So I read it as the latter. At least I had assumed that was the answer.
I just need clarification.
Yeah, my question was going to be, and this gets into, you give us direction, and then we research it and propose language. You know, is that in perpetuity? Is that the first time you pull a building permit? You know, if the building permit is issued, the improvements are complete, I live in one floor, and then I rent out the basement, and then I move out and rent out the first. Is there recourse for us? So those are the things we would have to...
Or you die? Look at.
Correct, yeah.
And right now we have no mechanism of knowing if a home is sold or a person moves out. So that.
Which we can do some research on and
correct.
Figure out how other towns have done it. If the direction is we prefer owner-occupied for certain decisions.
Just on that, so the owner-occupied may create some issues, but one thing they wouldn't, personally, I would think that the owner-occupied, if we put that criteria on it, is either or, not necessarily the primary residence.
Yeah, that's what
it
I'm saying.
It could be.
Sure.
Yeah, just to give more flexibility. Who knows? You might want to downsize. You might want just the
correct
900 square feet, and then you rent out the primary.
Maybe the retired parents got the cash and the kid doesn't. Yeah.
And you just, easy way of downsizing and not moving far.
Yeah.
I just want to say we 100% agree on this. If you want to mark this down.
Gotcha.
That first. Okay, so let's on this one, and if I'm not hearing the message clearly, and it's not real clear, I get it. But can we have staff? Is Bart suggesting get some more ideas in this? And again, we're not going to decide all these tonight. Bring this one back with some tweaks.
We can on the owner-occupied part of it. For the construction of the language on the special use entitled, permitted, I don't think we settle that with the tally.
I wanted to follow up to Dan, your comments. You said owner-occupied as in the PZC.
Correct, right, because the way they have it is
attached
is outright permitted, detached is special use.
Okay.
But if we're going to do owner-occupied, I'd prefer to have it outright permitted for owner-occupied, and if it's detached.
Okay, I see where you're going. Yep, the attached is outright permitted, detached, owner-occupied.
Right.
Okay.
Is there a consensus there?
Yeah.
I thought I heard some others say they wanted special use either way, or variance, or whatever the heck the term is, either way.
Yeah, I'm in favor of special use. I mean, if people want to get into real estate and rent things out and go buy an apartment building, primary residence. You know, if you're going to build something for a family member or something like that, you said it's fine, but if you're looking to make revenue off your personal property, it's not what your home is for, in my opinion. I would be in favor of either one.
So you're saying you prefer all uses attached to the
special
use?
Okay.
Others?
I still agree with Craig.
You. Special use?
Special use across the board.
Okay. I agree with Dan. Just kind of laid it out.
Okay. So we're not sad in that.
No, I think we're going to go back.
And I can.
We're kind of split.
Yeah, we are. No, and I can see. This one is, of all the things here, this one is probably the toughest for me. The others I feel I'm either indifferent on or I feel real passionately about.
Does the construction of a draft language for this section vary differently whether we put it as a special use versus it being permitted?
It could if you wanted to require specific standards for special use. We could go down that road. If not, we can just use the general standards for special use.
Let me rephrase that. Is it too much work to prepare two different blocks of text?
No.
For the two policy options
no.
here. Okay. So we'll do that so that we can have the conversation another day.
I do have one more question. If that was allowed, and say they were renting it out, is there a language that can be put into where you'd be required to show proof of insurance for like a property that you were renting instead of just your homeowner insurance.
Guess that can be incorporated as part of the building permit if it's allowed outright. If it's part of a special use, you can require that as evidence or supplementary information.
We can research that too. Yeah, and let you know if that's common.
If we're all rolled, maybe.
Well, then you got to think too. Is if you're looking at police and fire standards as well too. You're going to have two separate dwellings. You're going to need two separate numbers for fire, and there's a lot to think into it other than just I want to build a little thing for somebody to rent out.
Well, we'll bring this back. I still think right now we for the owner occupied, you can do it now. You really can. We don't go into people's house and say, does your mother-in-law live with you, and does she pay rent? We just don't do that. So it's really if you want to rent out to somebody else where it would really be.
And it seems like you keep referring back to when you pull the building permit, but my hunch is this is what comes into play more often on something that's already built, right? Instead of somebody originally building it with this idea.
A building permit will come in play if you're altering the structure to create a separate exit, entrance, a kitchen. That's where the building permit will come in.
So you're assuming that they don't do it without the permit?
Correct. It's required to have a permit to do anything. Right. Otherwise, you would have an illegal unit.
Which is what John was kind of saying, right? What stops somebody from going, how do we check that?
No, people do it now. There's how many people do you know that have full living quarters in their basement?
Yes,
just really the question is, are we going to allow them to rent it to their relative?
Well, and there's no prohibition on that currently.
Correct.
Under our zoning code. So
correct.
You can have a fully, you could have 10 bedrooms in a house, and as long as you're okay with living amongst 10 other people, you can rent out every room under our current zoning code and live there as, a family unit.
Correct. That's for the attached.
Right.
The detached is where we're having the conversation, it seems like. Should that be permitted outright?
We'll come back. We'll just have to. It's a good concept. It's just, I know these two guys and Christy debated this whole thing. I don't know that Christy debates, she just presents, but for how many meetings and hours, and some of these are going to be a challenge here. Next, parking standards. Minimum off-street parking is one space per unit, or minimum is two spaces per unit. I guess the question I have on that, Christy, what is required now?
Two.
So we do not allow one space garages.
Basically, it's one garage versus two car garage.
Wait, doesn't the driveway count as off-street parking?
So we had this discussion. Per the ordinance and how it's been interpreted, the garage counts as the off-street parking because you can have a short driveway run and not be able to park multiple vehicles or any vehicle in the driveway.
So what about, don't we have townhomes that have one-car garages in town?
Probably predated the current code standard.
Okay.
There are duplexes for certain that have one car garages and then one space in front. So as you alluded to, our conversation went kind of around on what counts as the parking space. If you're counting two, you'd count the garage and the driveway space. But if you're just counting the one, it's the garage space, assuming one car garage.
And what did you say is required now, two?
Two. For most,
so that's a garage in one spot.
Correct.
Right. And so what the kind of that conversation came about was if you do keep it on the basis of if it's a one-car garage, do you have to have that driveway space or do you have to provide that space somewhere else for a secondary? Do you have to land bank it somewhere or is it you have to just provide it right in front? So as the PZC recommendation is, it's actually 2.25 for townhomes. So they're actually saying two in front of the garage or the garage space, which I think we need to clarify that for that a little bit better. But it should be, they're asking for an extra quarter for every unit. They're asking for an extra quarter of a parking, guest parking.
What does that mean?
It's guest parking. So for, a four-unit building, you have one guest parking space outside of your garage. we've run into this, you know, kind of marketplace.
Who determines which person gets the guest spot?
Well,
it's like
first come, first serve.
Right, it's like public street parking, whoever gets the space.
Having lived in a unit like that in Bristol Bay, the guest parking 90% of the time is residents that have four people living there and their children are parking their cars there, or they have three cars in a condo and they can't park it, so they park their car there. So
two is current. Work. Two is current?
Correct.
Not 2.25? I thought I heard Chris say something.
2.25 is what is being recommended by Planning and Zoning Commission.
Oh, different than this.
Correct.
So yeah, PZC is looking to up it.
Correct.
Okay. So I'll ask this. Christy, I may have asked you this back in June. I don't remember. If I did, I apologize. If I didn't, I apologize. What's the impetus for saying we need less off-street parking in town?
Flexibility in development types. So if you wanted to, if you have a lot that's not very wide and you wanted to do a duplex, you can do a larger living structure and then have a smaller amount of parking. So to meet that width requirement. Townhomes as well. You can either have the garages detached and have them in the back, so that you have a wider area for the building structure itself, and then you wouldn't have to double that size to accommodate, if you have four units, eight side-by-side garages.
So do we have a plethora of developers coming to town saying, God, I need less parking requirements?
I have not.
Then in my feeling, we're the same. That's just a quick conclusion.
Right now it's two.
It's two, but PZC is recommending two and a quarter
for
the townhomes. So we do not have that requirement now.
That's the only one they're asking for the higher, because the apartment has a number that isn't being recommended for a change, but the townhome is recommended to add the additional guest parking, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm in the camp no less. Whatever you decide from there, that's fine. But there's no animal support less. I just don't hear people in town. Again, we have to remember the town we're in, people crying for smaller lots who live here. If anything, I have people saying townhomes, because I've been one for years, parking is tight, like Craig said. I can accept what it is, but I surely can't go around saying, let's make less parking off the street. I just can't
support. 2.25, I like that.
But does that make the requirements for all the garages bigger, though, or are you?
No, standard one-car garage, 200.
Space the developer put more additional spots for guest parking.
Yes. Correct. Now, keep in mind, in the downtown and the overlay district, we did reduce parking, off-street parking requirements, because of the small area for redevelopment.
Good reminder. Thank you. Anyone else? So, right now it's two.
Correct. Minimum.
We have one request to consider one space, one request to leave it the same, and a third, not necessarily here, but as Chris said, there was a third idea to increase it by a quarter.
Well, you would do it as separate development.
New development comes
out. 10 townhome unit development. You would say you'd have to have 24, or 22 or whatever.
So you might have two garages plus four off-site.
Correct.
You'd have to identify additional guest parking for those units.
I'm thinking of those new ones off of Creek Road there. So they're vertical, and there's four. So each one has a single car garage and a single spot in their driveway in the front.
Yep.
So now, who in that one set of buildings, if there's an extra spot, think of it less as who's going to park there, and more, do you want to force the developer to build additional parking spots at the time of construction?
So let's make it three.
That's a lot of parking.
That's a lot.
It does. There's units like that at Fox Highlands off of 71. There's townhouses, and in the middle is kind of a circular drive. In the middle, they have a parking island, and so that's how they got around having more parking.
That's what I was saying.
Right.
Yeah.
In Grand Reserve, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that works. That's a nice, Grand Reserve with the ranch homes have.
Correct.
Yeah.
Villas, yes.
I've seen that lots of subdivisions, actually, where my mother lives. Same thing. It works.
Same thing in Bristol Bay. Typically, wherever there's a bank of townhomes, on either end of the bank, there is additional spaces for their HOA would sometimes police that, if the car is sitting there too long, too many days.
You get one of those HOA
Nazis. Some of them are pretty rough.
So the only two comments we've had is that more parking is better. Is there anybody that is actively okay with lowering the parking standards, allowing less? Shaking heads.
So just to clarify that, the UDO draft had one unit, so it was a reduction. The advisory committee said keep it at two. And then plan commission said add the extra. So I honestly, I just say take the recommendation from the PZC, two for everything but two and a quarter for towns. Just take the recommendation.
So
that gets us the extra.
I still want to be clear on this, and I'm not saying Chris might get a win here. I'm not saying I disagree with that. What I'm trying to understand again is, how does the garage count?
Garage is the off-street parking. That has been how staff has applied it from day one when we do developments.
So basically all single-family homes would be required to have
a
two-car garage. Okay, but the difference here is we would allow that extra quarter for townhomes. They'd still have to have two-car garages?
Correct.
Then we'd have to define that the quarter could be somewhere?
Correct.
Okay. Anyone have a problem with that?
No.
Dan?
When we went through this during UDO, I didn't have any objection to the one car parking because I think it gave options. But the recommendation from the committee is two car. I understand it, and I will accept and go along with two plus the two and a quarter. So I do think that the PZC recommendation is the one that works best. Yeah. But on a personal level,
I
have no objection to one car.
It was just that whole, we know that there are some places that have one car garage, so we're trying to accommodate it, but it didn't, language didn't work well.
They also have some on the left, but
let me declare Chris was victorious on this point. Very nice, Chris. Okay. What?
People want to go out and play musical cars, so somebody will park on the street. That one will be empty.
Okay, so we have a few more. I think we're at 8:15. Let's try a simple one, if there's such a thing as a simple one.
Connectivity.
Yeah. Okay, connectivity standards. Christy, you explain this.
Sure.
How does these proposed rules differ from what we have now?
So what we have now is no real requirements for connectivity through development. Developers come in, we kind of look at the layout. For the most part, most of the subdivisions do adhere to the connectivity calculation, which is for every roadway, you would have 2 points of connection. So the index is for every street, you would have two nodes, so two intersections. That's all it is.
Okay, so what about cul-de-sacs, though?
So the idea is to kind of lessen cul-de-sacs within developments. You can still have them, but the overall subdivision should be a 1-to-2 ratio.
What about these small developments that have no options but cul-de-sacs or limited options?
That's why it's up for debate, for discussion.
Okay, it's not simple for me then.
And then if the street length is like 800 linear feet, you wouldn't have to have those 2 points of connections. But the longer the street, the more interconnections you should have, intersections.
If there was a connectivity index and somebody wanted to vary from that, it would be a variance?
Correct.
Okay, or a PUD part of the discussion?
It could be, if it was a new development, they could do it as part of the PUD.
So not that it wouldn't be allowed, just so they would have to prove out
correct
why they need a bunch of cul-de-sacs with no exits.
Okay, but now that makes more sense. Questions, comments from others? Let me, before you speak, Chris.
Sure.
I want to ask Christy, and I thought you said, take the subdivisions we're dealing with now. Not the older ones, but the new ones that are getting the homes built. Anything done in the last, say, 20, 25 years. Did you say most of those would meet
or exceed.
Okay.
Some are 1 to 3.
So this isn't really changing a whole lot of what we're doing already.
It's codifying so that when new developments come in, we can have the standard before them.
Okay. Okay. Chris. You have 24 seconds, 23. I'm just kidding.
No, it's not. With block lengths, cul-de-sac lengths, this is just an added step in the development process that's actually not necessary. Those criteria and good planning, this is just overkill. And it will, from what I've seen, tends to actually be more intersections, which are more problematic. The more intersections you have, the more points of conflict, the more issues. I understand connectivity for pedestrian sake, but there's a negative to it as well, which is why there was two recommendations to remove it.
So there might be more stop signs, four-way stop signs. Everyone hear that? Just saying that. Okay. Anyone here?
Would it lessen the cul-de-sacs?
Cul-de-sacs are typically just a factor of
bad planning.
No, it's not bad planning. It's fitting into a space that is hard to access. We have minimum radiuses that we have to apply to the streets. Cul-de-sacs are typically a way to make it accessible to get lots into those areas, which is typically extremely inefficient for a developer. They're large lots, they're pie lots, more infrastructure. The cul-de-sac heads are very expensive to build. It's just trying to have flexibility for a developer to do it. Public works, most of our staff don't like them, so we'll always get feedback that avoid them as at all possible, and most developers will avoid them at all cost if they can.
If we want to come back this one, we can. And we got two out of the way. That's not terrible. Anyone else? We'll come back to this one. Okay. I think that's enough for tonight. Let's say you want to tackle the sign
second? I think we should regulate.
If you want to tackle that tonight, that's fine. We're not getting through this all night anyway. So.
I don't think we can regulate
it. You want to regulate it at all? So instead of us put 50 signs in the yard?
Year round?
Year. I don't agree with that.
Then if you can't mow your grass around them, your signs?
Others?
I don't think we should regulate them.
Yeah, either do I.
Seaver?
I don't want to touch that.
That's fine. Okay. Dan, how are you?
We recommended as part of the committee not to kick the hornet's nest and regulate signs. I know initially we said we wanted to have some regulations, but revisiting it on our last meeting, we said nope. And I kind of agree that it has not been a problem to this point, and I don't see it becoming a problem
so,
in the future.
I'm definitely on board on this one. And I'm not dying on that hill. So I will say this though. See, you can learn to be practical too. I'm not pointing you, Chris.
Oh. Christy,
I'm not pointing to Christy. So, Christy, what I will ask though is, and I understand what everyone's comments are, if this becomes an issue, can we always come back and have
absolutely.
Some?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other caveat is the HOA usually has rules.
I understand, but there's a lot of people who live in HOA subdivisions. Which, good for them, right? Okay, well, that one was actually easier. Ken, thank you. So we did get three knocked out here.
Cluster developments for the win.
Cluster developments.
Nay. You're already 4 minutes over for what you said.
Yeah. Well, they're proud of me here. It's like, you know, yeah, we're making progress here. So did I hear one no for cluster developments?
Yes, that was for me.
That was a yes, or yes, that was a no. But no.
I don't want them.
Okay.
You don't want them for me.
Well,
I'm sorry,
is
you want to use PD?
Especially used to be okay.
PUD.
Yeah, that's fine. But I'll write for it. No.
What about, this came up last time, and I was real clear on it, and I got chastised with one of the aldermen here for suggesting that people might not have an opinion same as mine. What about allowing one extra unit per acre is a bonus density if they save wetlands that would be required to be saved because you can't build in a wetland anyway?
Well, that's what the PUD's about, right? So
the difference is this would allow higher density, not just smaller lots, but higher density overall if you allow the bonus.
As approved
Yeah.
The higher density is by one unit, right?
One unit per acre. See, that was it.
Right. So if it's going to be 3 units per acre, it allows you the 4 units per acre.
So if it's 100 acres, it's 100 extra units. I thought it was one overall.
But they still have to come for us for a vote.
If you require them to be special uses, the acreage and density bonus is just a guideline. It's not going to matter.
Which, if it were outright permitted, yes, they would be granted that extra unit.
Right.
If it comes through as a PUD, everything's negotiated. So typically, you're given a higher density.
I would suggest that we include it as suggested language, though. I'm not in favor of higher density. I'm not opposed to the cluster, but to give somebody an extra unit per acre just because they're saving stuff you can't build on anyway, that's a lot of times what's saved is stuff you can't build on.
So wetlands is not included in that.
I'm sorry?
Wetlands is not included in the density bonus. Density bonus is for native landscapes, mature tree stands, prime farmland, or critical habitat, or anything else that the council would like to save.
Yeah, that's me semantics. I'm not in favor of bonus density, I'm just not.
But you also don't want it to be outright permitted. You're saying it needs to be a special use.
Yeah, I'm fine with special use, yeah. I think we've got some developments in town that are real nice. They just have to have a higher, review process.
I agree with special use.
Oh, it had to be a special use.
Bless you. So over here tonight, Joe, you were special use?
Right.
Rusty?
Yeah.
Dan, you?
Dan right now.
Oh, he's getting angry at us. He had to disagree again. So, Chris.
Poor Dan. I don't want to speak for Dan, but as we came out of committee, we were both on the position of having him outright.
Okay, so you lost this one. Okay, well, hey, we made some progress on Dan. Do you want to voice your disapproval of our latest?
No.
Okay.
Dan wants to go home.
Okay.
So we have direction, I think, definitively on 4 of those 6 items. One of them requires a little bit more work, and then one of them we deferred. Yeah, connectivity standards.
Connectivity standards, and I thought ADU.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, and then what's the one on the second page in the Chapter 3 district standards?
Oh, that was the R2A.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that we are excited. Okay, well, we made some good progress tonight. Is there anything else we should be aware of, Christy, that's going to come back and we're like cul-de-sac or something that we forgot about?
There's always a chance for that.
Okay.
It's our working document.
But nothing that, you know how we think.
Oh,
you know how
sure.
I think. Anything that I'm like, oh my God, what the...
One thing that's still in there that there was discussion about is regulating murals, and it's just on how much of an area it would be allowed to cover a building.
Is it a house or like a...
No, it's only for commercial.
Oh, commercial, okay.
So would we allow it to cover... The direction that we had at our July 20th meeting was 70% of a non-primary facade, right? The consultant has said that if you regulate murals under signs, you might run into an issue with you looking at the content. I don't believe that's the case because you can just say an area, we're not looking at the content, and just have regulations that if you paint a mural, you can only cover a certain percentage of a building without looking at the content. That's something that if you guys want to discuss. Right now, it's left in there.
How is it right now?
Right now, in the current zoning ordinance or in the recommend or the UDO document?
Current.
There is language in our current ordinance that identifies a painted sign. That's where we get to a slippery slope where if you are looking at the content instead of being neutral about it. So when I review signs that are painted on, say, like for the Little Loaf Bakery.
I'm thinking of that one right now.
I only looked at the area that had text and just did a geometric area. The other area, the painted art, was not included in that calculation.
But isn't that all part of the mural? The whole thing? And not just the text?
So that's where you have the distinction between art and text. And so that's how the current ordinance is, that we're looking at text. But because of Gilbert, Reed versus Gilbert, we cannot look at the content. So if we say murals can be painted on a building, over 70% of a non-primary facade, you can do a painting, you can do advertising. If you want to take it out of the sign ordinance, then you won't be able to, we wouldn't regulate it under signage. We would just regulate it under some other type of regulation.
So we really don't need to change anything because we allow them now.
Yes.
You just look, if they're advertising, you look at the text of the advertisement.
Correct. Do you want to keep that language?
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
So then I'd have to revise this document to reflect that.
Oh, this document suggests we shouldn't have
some... What's the document suggest?
The document suggests that a mural can cover 70% of a non-primary facade of a commercial building.
But we don't restrict that now at all.
Correct.
I don't know why you all want to restrict, not restrict signs in the yard, but you'd want to restrict signs in a commercial building.
Yeah. So how to remove that from the document.
Good. Thanks, Chrissy.
All right.
See, there you go. Get an extra domain. Or salad, or whatever you want.
I did have one question, Christy. In chapter 4, under alternative energy, mm-hmm. are we going to include something solar in that?
Alternative energy does include solar and wind.
Okay, I just didn't read it in there. Yes.
You say it does?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty much language we have now under our ordinance.
Do we allow like those new mini nuclear plants that people are talking about? Micro nuclear plants, or whatever?
About nuclear
plants. I'm just asking.
Well, and then there's talk about hydrogen plants being added to it.
Yeah.
Where you have grid.
We do not have that.
Okay, well, I'm not worried about it yet. So. Okay.
There's a lot of pipes in those.
Okay. Any other questions? We're making good progress tonight. I'm impressed by all of you. Thank you. I didn't expect to get this much progress tonight. Okay. Well, we're going to have some more discussion on this, and if there's other things you want to talk about, let us know. Good summary, Chris. Thank you. Okay. Where the heck are we at? We saw your mayor's report. My God. Are you all here for school, or what are you all here for? Are you bored? You're just like, I see you texting your friends. This is boring, 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 and the mayor keeps talking. Okay, next, we have no city building update, no water study update. Any additional business? Any citizen comments? Tell Molly you got the sign thing.
A lot of people are waiting on that.
Oh, yes.
I should have mentioned earlier, Shaw Media has assigned David Pettish to cover the city of Yorkville. David has a lot of experience covering municipal government. He was covering the village of Oswego for our Kendall County operation, and more recently he's been covering the city of St. Charles for the Kane County Chronicle, which is another sister paper of the Shaw Media. So
mm-hmm. He's starting Saturday?
You,
well, let's call special meeting for Saturday, see if he shows up.
I know he's looking forward to meeting all of
them. After soccer. Well, thank you. We appreciate
Thanks.
It. Okay, I have no need for executive session. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Okay. I heard Poacher, second by Solon, off at yes. Motion carries, thank you. Who'd you get first? Poacher, Solon. Thank you all. Well, that was actually good progress. I don't know.